versus Commonwealth, Mr. Hargett, Ms. Murphy. Mr. Hargett, how are you today?
Well, Your Honor, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is David Hargett. I represent Mr. Hughes on the appeal of a murder conviction. The issue in this case is fairly narrow, but I think it has substantial merit. There was absolutely no need for the Commonwealth to present an expert witness on gangs or motorcycle gangs and their affiliations to establish any fact at issue in this case. And this is a situation where it was clearly known that at the time of the killing back in 2007, gangs or motorcycle gangs had nothing to do with the case.
Well, so it has. Assuming we agree with you. Let's talk about harmless error, because it seems to me, given the other evidence in the case, arguably at least, you might have harmless error here.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but the problem is that you put an expert on the stand. I mean, we're not talking about a few questions here and there about warlocks or there's some clothing associated with the warlocks. That's harmless. When you put an expert on the stand to describe what it means to be in a motorcycle gang, you're telling the jury that this is important. I mean, obviously. And it's not important because it has anything to do with the timing of the murder. It's important because of whatever other reason. And that is, it turns out, it's highly inflammatory. I mean, the problem with gang testimony is that once you think that somebody's in a gang and you have an expert to describe what that means, they don't follow the law. They consider themselves outside of the law. They consider themselves above the law. They're not law enforcement friendly. As a matter of fact, we talk about a couple of other cases where gang evidence comes in, and the concern is that it's hard to disassociate violent criminal behavior from being in a gang.
Counsel, may I interrupt you just a moment? Assuming that we do have, Judge Humphreys pointed out, harmless error, how we have testimony from Benzie, Sullivan, and Cameron that, you know, all these crimes, bad acts they talk about, they talk about the warlocks. So how is it, in fact, not cumulative to begin with? It seems that nozzle, nozzle, how do you pronounce it?
I wasn't there, Your Honor, but I pronounce it nozzle.
A nozzle, I would assume nozzle as well. But nozzle really didn't add anything in his expert testimony that wasn't already in the record.
Well, I think that he did. I mean, words warlock were mentioned in a motorcycle club. At one point, I think the detective testified, he threw the gang language in there. That wasn't the question that was posed to him, so he threw that out there. But what Nozzle goes on and says is he talks about the culture, the history, what it means to be a one percenters, what the Hell Angels are, the warlocks, and other outlaw nature of gangs. And that's the problem. I mean, yes, he did.
Well, I think what Judge Chafin's getting at, and it's my question as well, is what opened the door, if you will, to all of this was Sullivan testifying that he wore a hoodie so no one would see his face because Hughes was, quote, in the warlocks motorcycle gang, and that's why he was afraid of it. And the expert then testified, I guess in pertinent part as far as you're concerned, that the warlocks are among these one percenters of motorcycle clubs that don't have a lot of respect for the law, essentially. And I guess Judge Chafin's question is mine as well, is how is that harmful error, if you will, given what the witness has already testified to, which is that he's afraid of this guy because he's in the warlocks motorcycle gang. I mean, how did it? Yeah, I guess it was offered to corroborate that to some degree. And assuming it was error to offer it, how would that have changed the result, or how would that necessarily demonstrate the unfairness of the trial?
Well, I mean, then you got to take the case entirely in its full context. And so I understand that the harmless error aspect is really where this case may come down. But the important point is that the testimony that was given throughout was whether he was scared, yes. And he says he was scared because of this motorcycle gang affiliation, or he actually calls it a club at some points. It depends on which testimony you're actually looking at. And there's no real dispute that at some point, because I think the defendant even told law enforcement when he was asked these questions, if he was affiliated with them at the time of his arrest. And he was. That should have been the end of it. There was no need for the expert to tell to describe what a gang means to the people above and beyond what they might already commonly assume. They might already commonly assume that there is this group of people who kind of do what they want to do. But when you get a witness on the stand and he's declared an expert, again, I think it's important to point out that at that point, this is the only expert. I mean, it's not like this is an expert-driven case.
Mr. Hargett, I think the analogy would be if the witness had said, this guy's in the Hell's Angels motorcycle club, and I was afraid of him. And again, this gets back to Judge Chaffin's question. If then a expert gets on the witness stand and says, Hell's Angels is a motorcycle club that has a lot of people that break the law. They manufacture methamphetamine, they sexually assault women, they do all kinds of horrible things. Assuming it was error to admit that, what is different about that ordinary jury wouldn't have already gotten from the mere testimony, I was afraid of the guy because he's a Hell's Angel? It seems to me that's the analogy or the question we have.
Right, and but yes, there is the fear that merely mentioning the word is going to cause them to speculate or infer something bad about this individual. He has a bad character, he's a bad person, he's involved in a group that engages in violent acts. But that's one thing to say, that it's possible that they may have thought that. We don't know, because we're not going to ask the jurors, what do you know about gangs? What does gang association mean to you personally? So we're concerned about that initially. Any mention of gang might lead somebody to believe violent tendencies, criminal acts, etc., etc. When you have a witness then get on the stand and say, this is really, really means to be in these gangs, and this is how they behave, then you're bringing it to the front, and you're saying, this is exactly whatever fears or suspicions that you might have, jurors, it is now confirmed by not just a witness, but an expert in the area.
Counsel, may I interrupt you again? Didn't Hughes himself take the stand and testify that, in fact, he was a member, or had been a member of that gang? That, in fact, the testimony that was provided by the expert, Noggle, was that it was a one percenter group, and basically confirmed what was testified to by the expert. Isn't that correct?
His testimony was that he was a part of the motorcycle club. He did not talk about it being an outlaw gang. He did not talk about it being part of the one percenters who engaged in violent or criminal activity. So, yes, again, and it's kind of unavoidable to be able to have a witness say, I was afraid of him. Why were you afraid of him? Because he's a scary guy. You know, okay, how do you get that evidence out? How do you object? You can't say he's a scary guy. Well, so that's going to have to come in at some point, right? But then to put on evidence about why he's such a scary guy is the problem here. At some point, even if it's at all probative, the prejudice that is inherent in that type of testimony outweighs the probative value. I mean, and that's exactly the argument that was made. The judge did try to limit the evidence in some way, but the argument here is, in the way that we phrased the assignment of error, was that Nozzle shouldn't have testified at all. He shouldn't have been declared an expert at all, because it was completely unnecessary. You're putting into their heads you're basically confirming any fears that they have. Now, when you talk about jury instructions, juries are told, you know, they have to rely on the evidence. They can't rely on suspicion or belief. So they could, at some point, even being told he was part of this motorcycle club, or even call it a motorcycle gang if you want.
Parker, you're kind of between a rock and a hard place, it seems to me, because, again, hypothetically, had the officer testified as an expert that the tradition and culture of the Warlocks Motorcycle Club was to eliminate witnesses against any of their members if they were ever charged with a crime. It seems to me that would be highly relevant and admissible to corroborate the witness's statement. This particular witness didn't say that or anything like that. He testified generally about stuff that arguably, and I think from my view at least, was probably irrelevant and totally unnecessary. But the question is, how much did it harm what damage did it do from a tangible standpoint to the outcome of the trial? And so the more damaging evidence that I just articulated that wasn't testified to, if it hypothetically had existed, would have been highly relevant. The probative versus prejudicial argument might be something to make there. But the point is, this testimony was less relevant, but your argument is it's somehow more inflammatory, maybe, I guess, or maybe I'm not understanding your argument correctly.
Well, I mean, that hypothetical is not this case. And I would have many different arguments about whether or not a person can actually say that this gang is known for eliminating witnesses to corroborate somebody's fear that they might have. Because keep in mind, fear is not an element of the charges that Mr. Hughes was facing. That's really what we need to kind of focus on. We're not talking about anything other than that. So the problem is that when the fear that he has, that's testified to. Okay, fine. You can't eliminate that. The other component, and I pointed out in the brief, is that he claims that he was attacked. Benzie was attacked for being a snitch. And he wanted to be able to say that it was because it was gang members who did that to him. The judge left that out because why? It's highly inflammatory to suggest that without being able to tie Mr. Hughes to that attack, a knife to the throat, et cetera, it's inflammatory, right? But instead, they weren't able to say these were gang members that assaulted me in jail. But by putting on this expert, they were allowed to talk about how the group operates and how they consider themselves above the law, et cetera, and allow the jury to now infer that that attack was gang-related specifically because Mr. Hughes was a dangerous person and part of this gang. And
sorry,
that's
getting into your rebuttal time. You keep going if you want.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that's kind of the last point I wanted to make is that it's not just that they were given information that was completely unnecessary and inflammatory. We start there. And if we can tie it back to this attack in the jail, it just expounds everything into this, Mr. Hughes is a really bad, violent guy, and we have to get him off the streets. Even if we're not 100% convinced that he was the person who committed the murder, he needs to go away for a long time. And that's what the jury did. I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Sorry, thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May I please report Gene Murphy for the Commonwealth. First, in response to Judge Chafin's question, I think at page 715 that, in fact, Hughes did admit that the clothing that they had found in his vehicle did reference the one percenters. And, in fact, that as part of, they asked him, as part of the Warlock tradition, they claimed to be one percenters.
Right.
So he did, in fact, basically confirm the testimony of the expert, Detective Nozzle. But getting back to first, I think it's clear that this testimony is relevant. We do have two witnesses, both of whom mention the Warlocks, or at least...
What's the relevance of the expert talking about the culture and the one-percenter business and American Motorcycle Association's definition of an outlaw gang or whatever. What relevance does any of that have to an element of the offense?
Well, first of all, I mean, the relevance is that, in fact, it does connect him with the Warlocks. The one percenter, as they said, came from the fact that his property in the car referenced that one percenter. So it seems to me explaining the significance of the clothing found there is that, in fact, he is connected with the 1% outfit. That, in fact, it is a reason to demonstrate that, he's not just in a motorcycle club. he's in a motorcycle gang that is an outlaw gang and that is connected with the one percenters. And this is why this apparently what appears at first blush to be an exaggerated fear of Mr. Sullivan, the fact that he's wearing a disguise and wearing a jacket over a hoodie over his head. Well, why is he so afraid? I mean, if Mr. Hughes is the cause of this fear, they're entitled to confirm that.
May I interrupt you? In fact, Sullivan and Cameron both they testified or stated that Hughes was a member of the Warlock
right.
and motorcycle club, and that motorcycle club did not cooperate with law enforcement in reference to their testimony with an outlaw motorcycle club. So
yes,
they made it clear through their testimony before Nozzle ever testified that they were frightened of Mr. Hughes, and one reason was because he was a member of the Warlocks.
Sure. So I think in a sense it is cumulative, but it is admissible evidence. Now, I think if you look at the transcript, the most prejudicial testimony at any point, I think, is the detective's testimony at page 115 when they was talking about Sullivan's fear. He said, it's a natural assumption that loss of fear would be instilled in the witness because Hughes is a member of an outlaw motorcycle gang. Well, this is, I think, the most prejudicial. There's testimony later on from Nozzle that the group is an outlaw gang, that it's one percenter. But together with that was the limiting testimony that, yes, it's not. First of all, it's not a crime.
But Mr. Murphy, I think what's kind of lost in all of this is the fact that at the time of the murder, he wasn't a member of the motorcycle.
Absolutely
club.
Right.
Nor is there any indication that the murder itself is in any way connected with a motorcycle.
As the judge pointed out in the circuit court judge 563 of the appendix, why this is admissible is because there was a lot gotten into on cross-examination of the two major witnesses about their fear and what the basis for their fear was. And so to the extent they've got that evidence about this organization and the fact that the paraphernalia was found there, that's supportive of their fear. Now, don't forget that the defense that the defendant raised was these people aren't afraid of anybody. They concocted this scheme because Hughes wasn't involved. They were. And they decided to pin this on him. So to the extent that you can confirm that, in fact, they are afraid of him, that this is the reason for the hesitancy about their testimony and the fact that they were so concerned, he meant that you're confirming their testimony that, in fact, he was involved and that they're afraid that involving him will lead to retaliation. And that what we have is a situation in which, yes, it is his membership at the time that the crime was eventually discovered that's important, not what happened back at the time of the offense. Because that's the reason why they are so fearful at this point. And that it's important, it seems to me, to demonstrate why that's the case.
Mr. Murphy, if we, assuming hypothetically that it should be determined that his testimony was really not relevant, ultimately, and if we conclude that, in this case, and if we conclude that, and I know you disagree with that, if we conclude that, and it was admitted anyway, then in my hypothetical, wouldn't that then therefore be harmless error?
Well, I think it clearly is harmless error. Everything that he testified to was stated by other testimony. And some of the other testimony that had come in before that was even, I think, more prejudicial. And then if you look at the other evidence that the Commonwealth presented, and particularly the testimony of Salvador, who lived on the same property that he shared with Benzie, who in fact testified that he had seen the four people there, the defendant, the victim, and the two eyewitnesses, that he had seen the two people wrestling. The defendant and the victim. And the defendant ever denied that having happened on that property. He said, well, maybe in passing sometime we had wrestled. He might have knocked over something at my shop. But he also testified to the line, that he had seen a bag of line in the defendant's vehicle on that occasion. At that point, he testified that Benzie said to him, "Go away, you're not welcome, we've got business to do today." He also had seen Hughes with the Derringer, but Hughes denied he had ever possessed or had any contact with. So it seems to me that the question is, are the eyewitnesses lying, or are they telling the truth, or are they trying to frame Hughes? Together with Salvador's testimony, that's a clear confirmation of their testimony, and contradicts what the defendant said in terms of this wrestling event never happening, I didn't know anything about the gun, this four people on Benzie's property one time didn't occur. And finally, of course, don't forget, important here is motive. There was no evidence whatsoever of any motive for the killing with respect to Sullivan or Benzie. But with respect to the defendant, there was a clear motive which they said he expressed, and which he didn't deny. The basis was that the victim had made advances both to his wife and to his daughter, and that the defendant says he had cleared up the problem with respect to his daughter. And he said when he had heard about what the indecent exposure to the wife, he said, "Well, I was upset." And they said, "Well, did you do anything?" "No, I didn't do anything." I think that what we have is clear evidence that he had a significant motive to kill this man, and that together with Salvador's testimony, any error in admitting the evidence would be insignificant because of the fact that it didn't add anything of any substance. Everything significant that was testified to by the expert was already before the court. All he said was that the Warlocks are an outlaw gang that connected with the One Percenters. All of that was already in there. And as I say, they made it clear that this is the kind that Cameron had said, this is the kind of group that instills fear in people. And that, I think I say, that's much worse than anything the expert said. And that came in and basically demonstrated that, in fact, there was a substantial basis for the fear of these two witnesses. And unless there are any further questions, I request that the decision below be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. Hardy?
There was some testimony about his being part of this grouper game. Nozzle added an explanation for what being a one percenter meant. He talked about what it meant to be an outlaw. He gave them the details. Keep in mind, and I think that I can't stress this enough, expert testimony is given great weight by a jury. That's why it becomes so significant that you have an expert testifying about, forget about the subjective fear of Mr. Sullivan or Mr. Benzie. We're now going to prove that their fear was justified. That's not really relevant. And when you go beyond that and put into the evidence that there's a good reason for them to fear him because he's part of a group that engages in all this stuff, we're talking about bad character. We're talking about smearing Mr. Hughes' character. And I do think that the expert testimony went well beyond the testimony that was presented. Because if you look at the case law and when you start talking about these things, the assumption is that they're going to assume that he's a bad person because of this. Okay, maybe they assume it a little bit, but now they're given an expert testimony to say it's okay to believe that to be true. It's okay for you to go ahead and think that. So, and it's analyzed under prior bad act testimony. And if you keep in mind that there is no exception for establishing credibility of witness under the prior bad act law. The prior bad act law talks about modus operandi or relationship between the parties and motive evidence, right? That's what it talks about. Not we're going to prove up somebody's credibility. So let's say a witness comes in and says, "I fear this person because I've heard these bad things about them." Okay? That evidence perhaps comes in. That's their subjective fear. Is it then admissible to prove that whatever they thought about him was actually true? It clearly can't be. Because if it's the purpose of the testimony to say, "I had subjective fear," you don't have to prove that it was justified. You don't have to prove that the reason for fearing them was actually true. That's where it becomes a problem. So you can't keep out the testimony that I was afraid of somebody because of something else. But to prove what that something else was makes it impossible for you to overcome the negative indications, connotations that come along with that. And yes, I understand that it was said that he was part of this group. And of course, it was blown up into this big thing. But when the expert testifies and gives the jury the reason to justify that fear, then it becomes inflammatory. Then it becomes something that can't be overcome. And for those reasons, I would ask that the court reverse and remand it for a new trial.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Hargett. We'll come down and greet counsel and take up the last case of the day, which is Bossette versus Commonwealth.
All rise.